when you left the Marines, Lieutenant Colonel?
Lieutenant Colonel, that's correct.
Pretty cool. Fought my Veterans Day, you know, I saw some references to, you know, that some quotes from you, and so, man, you know, I probably ought to a little more often probably remember that. Well, Lieutenant Colonel Paul Schimpf.
Well, you know, it's Paul now, you know, yeah. But that is what my identity was.
Well, you have to understand that I've been strongly conditioned that there's no such thing as a former Marine, so I don't even tinker with that idea. Once you're a Marine, always Marine.
That's right. Once a Marine, always a Marine. And it is, you know, when people ask me kind of what my mindset is, how my mind works, I still think like an infantry officer.
Right.
That's how I process and analyze information. But it's, you know, I did have the opportunity to make some remarks at different Memorial Day ceremonies.
Right.
And I enjoy doing that. Memorial Day is an important holiday, and it's something that, you know, I personally think that it is great that we celebrate Memorial Day when we do, because it is in close proximity to commencement exercises, whether it's high school or university.
Right.
And I think it's perfect because, you know, one weekend we're saying, okay, you know, congratulations, you have accomplished so much. And then the next weekend we say, look, here's an example of how you can serve. Here's an example of how you can give back. So I think it's serendipitous that Memorial Day is so close to the graduations.
And it's interesting because I consider them rites of passage to adulthood, where you are accountable for your deeds.
You know, you are.
And that's the way I kind of see it, as a cultural transition. Now you're an adult.
You're an adult, and Memorial Day is about, it's celebrating the sacrifices and the choices that these men and women made that gave their lives for our country. You know, and there's a lot of, you know, I'm sure we'll go into politics. There's a lot of negativity about politics. You know, some aspects of our political culture are downright toxic. Memorial Day is kind of the antidote for that, because no matter how bad things get, you know, how can you not be still optimistic about our country when you know that our best and brightest are still raising their hand and saying, you know what, my friends, my family, my community, my country are all worth fighting and dying for?
I have to agree with you. If you love something enough, you want to stand up to it, fight for it. So let's go for that. Let's talk about this budget. Was there enough of a fight? I mean, they bring a bill to you in the Senate on Wednesday, 1,245 pages. Say, here, vote on it.
Well, we need to improve our process. I am not going to defend the process by which this was passed. You know, and I think, you know, we talked at the beginning of this spring about my legislative priorities for this past spring. I think one of the bills that I'm going to look at filing this next session that's coming up is, I think there ought to be a 72-hour cooling off period before you can vote.
Flip that 1,200-page budget out. I think you need to be able to have a couple of hours to digest it. Yes,
I think a 72-hour cooling off period before you vote on any appropriations bill, 72 hours after the bill or the amendment is filed.
And if it was only 1 year, I would think differently. But this is done year after year after, here it is, you want to go home, sign it.
So the process needs to be improved. Now the way this all went down, though, is this was negotiated over a several week period,
by an elite group.
But it was
the budgeteers.
The budgeteers were senators that were designated by the leaders of the caucuses. There were two Republican senators that were negotiating it, and I was able to give them my input. I told them, look, this is what I am looking for. These are my priorities. There were a couple things that I very specifically wanted in this budget, and I was able to pass that along to them, and it got included. And you could argue as well that if you tried to have all 59 senators and all 118 representatives in a room, could you really get something hammered out if you had almost 200 people trying to be in the room and hammer things out? That's the counter argument,
right.
You know, but
and legitimate.
And so I don't think the budget process is perfect. You know, it needs to be improved a little bit, and I certainly think a cooling off period where we can take a closer look at what is in the final product would be something that would help. But I, you know, at the same time, this may be the best that we can expect right now, based on just the toxic environment that is in Springfield.
All right. So the House voted for the budget 97-18. I think in the Senate it was 54-something.
I think it was 56-2.
And then there was
one senator who's ill and wasn't able to come down. But 56 yes votes. I was one of those yes votes. And the reason I voted yes, this is not a perfect budget. It's not the budget that I would have drafted if I had been the one that was king and making all the decisions. But I do think that this was the best budget we can get right now with Speaker Madigan and President Cullerton in control of the Illinois General Assembly.
So you view this budget that we have now with a certain level of content or contempt? Are you happy, or is it...
I view it more as a lost opportunity. It is a status quo budget, but I think it's the best budget we can get right now. And the alternative to this budget was not a better budget. The alternative was an impasse, which would have been disastrous
okay.
for Southern Illinois.
All right, and I think that's interesting as well. You know what I find interesting in the House vote? Terry Bryant, Natalie Phelps Finney, yes. David Severin and Democrat Jerry Costello II, no.
I haven't seen the reasons that they've given for why they voted no, so I really don't know what was going through their head. I know that there are some that have been critical of this budget because they say that it's not balanced.
Right.
That
by about a billion. Now that and one of the first people that came up with that was the Illinois Policy Institute within minutes of the approval.
Well, you and I have talked about my history with the Policy Institute.
Right.
They've put some stuff out that was, frankly, pretty misleading about me and my voting record. You know, and I think it's very easy to be outraged about stuff. It's also, you know, a headline saying this may not be a really good budget doesn't get as many clicks as a headline that says this budget is not balanced. Their argument is with GOMB, the Office of Management and Budget, and also COGFA, the Commission of Forecasts and Government Accountability. Those entities say that this budget is balanced. For the first time since 2001, we have a GOMB spending amount that is less than what GOMB estimates that revenue will be coming
at
in.
The 38.5 billion.
Yes.
All right. Now, the governor says, does not include, this is directly from his press release, from the governor's office, that the budget does not include much-needed debt pay down and reforms that would reduce taxes, grow our economy, create jobs, and raise family income. Later on in the press release, I'll be taking action to quickly enact the fiscal year 19 budget into law. Note the term action as opposed to sign.
I think that what he means by that is, in order for this budget to work, for it to be balanced, it is going to require work from the government, from the state of Illinois, to make sure that we keep spending at the levels that we've forecasted it at. That's why I think the governor used the word enact, because it is not something that we can say, hey, you know, this is perfect and we can just treat this as a fire and forget missile. This is something that we are going to have to do work to keep spending lower, meaning that we make sure that eligibility for government programs is monitored. It also, we have to do work in order to make sure that the Thompson Center sells. So there is work
question, because that's that Thompson Center at $600 million.
$300 million. They forecasted it at $300 million, and that is a very conservative estimate of what they're going to be able to get for
it. Isn't there another $600 million involved in this budget involving sale of state property? I just read something that's just coming to mind while I was talking. I thought maybe you know what it is.
I'm not sure about that. I know the what I was briefed is that they are planning on getting $300 million for the sale of the Thompson Center. That is what they estimated the value that they could get from the sale of the Thompson Center at. That number is based on an appraisal that is a number of years old, so right. They could potentially get more than that. But it seems like what a lot of people are, the reason a lot of people are saying that, well, this is maybe not balanced, is because they don't like the fact that it relies on projections. We're projecting how much revenue we're going to receive. We're making projections about how much that we're going to spend. And right. A lot of times you hear people say, well, you know, we need to be doing our budget like you would sit down and do your budget around the family dinner table. And I'll go ahead and bite on that analogy. But the thing that I want to note is when you make your family budget at the dinner table, you are relying on projections. You're projecting, oh, how much income am I having come in? You're not saying, okay, well, how much do we have in our bank account right now? And that's the only amount that we're allowed to spend.
Right.
You're relying on projections. You're thinking, okay, am I going to take a summer job?
Am I going to keep a job?
Right.
Right.
So, you know, to say that this is, you know, a phony budget because there are projections, I don't think that's being intellectually honest.
And I get that, too. Yeah, you have to estimate to a certain degree. $300 million Thompson Center. I'm looking where I got that $600 million figure once. The $600 million comes from the income tax increase. That's an additional $600 million. That's the right number came into my head. All right, so the budget moving forward, there's a level of morale, security, fear of unknown has been a big issue in Illinois, especially when it comes to educators. But when it comes to the other things done in the Senate this year, ERA, 72-hour waiting period for purchase all guns, taking guns from people who are dangerous. I mean, which one of those do you want to pick out to talk about first?
Well, I think you can lump a lot of those into the broad category of political theater, stuff that's not really going to affect our lives, but is stuff that makes politicians feel good.
All right. Are we talking about guns here?
We're talking about guns. You know, the last day, once again, I voted no on, you know, on a couple more gun control bills. That's
which
something.
Two?
We voted on. There was a 72-hour waiting period
right.
thing. Voted no on that, and then the new gun dealer licensing thing, which lost when the governor vetoed 1657, and Senator Harmon was unable to cobble together the votes to override the governor's veto. Well, he basically reintroduced that legislation as an amendment on a different bill, Senate Bill 337. That bill passed the House, came back over to the Senate, and I voted no on that again. And that was, I don't talk a lot during the floor debates, but that was one of the floor debates that I felt like I had to say something. This idea that we're going to create a new gun dealer licensing system in the state of Illinois, you know, I can see why they keep resurrecting that idea.
Void cards for gun stores with more investment required on the part. Now, it was interesting because the legislation you talked about that came back, they wanted to address the governor's issue about burdensome, as the senator had used the word. We addressed that by reducing the yearly fee and maybe even making it a 5-year fee or something
like
that.
Well, they reduced the amount a little bit, but there's still some disparate impact between the big box stores.
The permit was never really the cost of the permit. From the gun stores that I talked about, Paul, they were talking about we've got to build these vaults, and these security issues are also really expensive.
Right, and those are all still in there. So I'm not surprised that we keep seeing this legislative proposal, because frankly, this is something that is perfect for a Chicago progressive. You have a big expansion of government, you have a diminishment of our constitutional rights, and then you have favorable treatment for the corporations as opposed to the small businesses. So this is a Chicago progressive's fantasy, and that's why we're going to keep seeing it.
I got to tell you, and I know political theater is everywhere, right? It really is. It's like the kabuki theater of Illinois politics, right? You get that. You're getting the charge and the yelling and the grimacing face, and then something good happens or bad happens or whatever the case. But so much of it is that flamboyant aspect. I expected more in relationship to the November election in this budget process, and I didn't sense it. I sensed that there was a much more utilitarian subtext to what was doing. Now, there was the gun stuff, right? But I did sense that Illinois politicians, I think, understand that we're watching very closely on an unprecedented level, scrutiny. And I felt that there was some level of response. Now, I'm not happy with the amount of money we're spending. Neither are you. But it seemed like people were a little more focused on doing their jobs as opposed to looking like they were doing their jobs. Am I wrong?
Well, I think a lot of elected officials realized how bad the impasse was for our state. I mean, that is something that is going to take us years to recover from, from the effects of the impasse.
Monetarily and emotionally and psychologically, we call it.
Oh, I think so. And you're the first person that has brought up the psychological impact, but I think that is a valid point. I think people are it's going to take people a while to get back the level of trust in their government, that we need to have.
It manifests itself in the fact that people constantly look at the door to lead the state. I mean, when you look at this new $11.5 billion bill, one of my favorite listeners sent me a text. Yeah, so now people will have nice, smooth roads to drive out of the state on. Right.
Well,
but that's that keyhole insight into the psychology of Illinois. Oh, yeah, let's build some new roads so we can leave faster.
Well, but there are so many people, that are not, that don't want to leave. I think, people want to leave the state. People want to leave the state of Illinois in the same way that an animal would like to gnaw its leg off if it was caught in a trap. I mean, you don't want to do that. You're only going to do that if you have to do it in order to survive. So I think people want to stay here. And, what we have to do as leaders is we have to give them a reason to stay. And, one of the reasons, a reason to stay is if you believe that things are going to be better in the future, that there's going to be a change, that it's not going to be status quo. And really, that's going to be, what this next election here that's coming up, this governor's election, is really going to be a decision on, is are we going to keep doing what we've been doing, or are we going to move in a different direction? And one of the things that we have to do, and we haven't done in the past 2 years that I've been up in Springfield, is we have done nothing to make our state more competitive. We have done nothing to make this a state that people want to come to and create jobs.
And what should we do? I mean, if you get one, you get pull one out of the hat and you say one that'll really make effect. And what's Paul Schimpf? Because you're right. We haven't done anything to stop this. And it's interesting because I actually have a theory, a psychological theory in relationship. I'm not a psychologist, but I play one on the radio, right?
And you do it well.
Thank you. The current state of mind of any human being is a direct derivative of the prospects for future happiness. You cannot be happy right now if there's not the prospect of future happiness. And that's Illinois in a nutshell, especially when you talk about prospects for improving the state, making it better. People don't choose to go to their own colleges in the state of Illinois. They go to Murray. They go to Evansville. They leave. And when they graduate and they have gone to school, they leave. So what is that magic to make Illinois business friendly again?
I think the easiest thing that will improve our business climate is the workers' comp reform. That to me is the low hanging fruit.
And we've swung at that ball and still didn't. We may have hit it, but we didn't hit a home run. We didn't do enough, did we?
We haven't gotten anything meaningful. And the reason that I don't think we have gotten anything meaningful is just that we haven't done enough to lower the costs. Where it's going to be a case where it doesn't cost three times as much anymore in Illinois to create a job compared to what it costs in Missouri. But that's something that I really feel like if we're going to be able to have that, if we're going to be able to have a significant change, we are going to have a different person in control of the Illinois House. The reality is, nothing moves through the Illinois House unless Speaker Madigan wants it to go through. And something that we'll have to talk about a little bit later is we didn't get the task force bill moving through fast enough. I think it's going to get signed eventually, but it's probably not going to be signed now until November. And that's something that I'm going to have to go back and talk with the grassroots coalition and say, what do we want to do? Do we want to try to have these meetings before this law actually is signed, or do we want to wait and do we want to try to do it again next year? Because this was something, it passed the Senate. It went over to the House. Representative Costello and I talked on a daily basis. He was trying to get it called early enough that it could come back over to the Senate for a concurrence, and he was told no. He asked repeatedly, and he was told no.
The committees in the House, an old friend of mine told me this, House committees are places where good ideas go to die. Interesting quote, huh? Hey, we're out of time.
We are. It's been a good discussion.
But I got to squeeze two more things in because I want to talk. Because I want to off the beaten path. Do you think Donald Trump should commute Governor Brad Blagojevich's sentence? And I'm asking this not only as a senator, but as a lawyer.
I don't think so. My understanding, and I have not taken a close look at it, but my understanding is that Governor Blagojevich was only charged with the tip of the iceberg. There was a lot of stuff, a lot of shenanigans going on that wasn't brought forward. The other thing that I would like to see from Governor Blagojevich before anybody talks about pardoning him or commuting him.
Contrition.
Some remorse. There is none. He's like, I didn't do anything wrong. Well, buddy, if you don't think you did anything wrong, you have not been rehabilitated.
And now I'm glad I asked you the question. Liu Lang. Boom. Liu Lang. An accusation. Resigns his leadership role. Deputy Majority Leader. Number two or number three in Democratic power structure. Boom, gone from his leadership role. Surprised me. I didn't see that one coming.
It was an eventful day.
It really was.
In Springfield. I didn't see it coming either. And one of the reasons, just the way I'm wired, I try to get home and I try to get to the hotel room so I can talk to my boys before they go to bed every night.
Right.
So I don't stay out and drink and carouse in Springfield. So I'm blessedly ignorant of a lot of the unfortunate activities that go on after hours in Springfield.
Yeah. And as a result, sleep better at night too, don't you?
And able to get up in the morning and go for a run.
Yeah. Hey, it's always good to see you, Chief. I really do appreciate you taking time to come in. We got a lot of things to talk about still yet. We have a lot of issues. The fact that we have a budget is reassuring. Special people, education, highways. Really curious about the $11.5 billion six-year spending bill for highways. So you and a guy again soon, okay?
That sounds good. Really enjoy talking with you, Tom.
Always do. Glad you took the time to come and join us in the studio, too.